Empower Radio presents The Farkas Files, an exploration of energy, metaphysics, and the paranormal with David Franklin Farkas. The Farkas Files. The truth is in here, somewhere. Here's your host, David Franklin Farkas.
Good evening. Thank you for spending some time with us. Thank you, one and all, for being with us wherever you are, whenever you are. You could be any place in the world. It could be any time. I was just talking to a friend of mine in Australia, and it was the next day. And I always say that it's good that it's the next day in Australia because you don't have to worry about the world ending tomorrow. My guest tonight is Annie Tuzman, who wrote an incredible historical novel, and I am looking forward to hearing the juicy stuff about how that happened. But first, tonight's metaphysical musing, which maybe is more political than metaphysical tonight. I'm not sure. That's been happening lately. I watched, among the many things I watch on Netflix, I watched Oliver Stone's series called The Untold History of the United States. And those of us who are in the middle of whatever era it is, whatever time it is, are getting our information from the government and the media and whatever research we can do. But basically what we're getting is propaganda. There's a story that's being put out very effectively to tell us how we should think about the circumstances. And you may have an inkling that something is not quite the way it's being told, but it's really hard to figure out what's the real story. So he tracks the unfolding of American history with a lot of film and interview stuff from World War I through the Obama administration. Absolutely fascinating. And what I found out is most of what I believed was the course of history was not what they told us. That things actually were done for reasons other than what we thought they were done for. That some actually very terrible things and terrible manipulations of circumstances were done and cover it up, all kinds of things. Even the people that I really loved all along, that I think are wonderful human beings, did really bad stuff. And in listening to it for some really bad reasons. Which is really disconcerting, but even more disconcerting with our present new president and the stuff that's coming out about his administration and what they're doing. I'm really concerned about all the members of his administration that were talking to the Russians before he got here. What's up with that? That's not right. But you know, what do I know? I'm just some American citizen sitting over here by myself. But it's very even more disconcerting having watched this show, which shows all the things that were very, very different from the storyline that we were all being told. So what's the point? You know, other than, as somebody put it, the United States is either an oil company or a munitions company with its own army, very big army. You have to watch really carefully and be very suspicious of what you're being told and what the real reasons for almost anything, whether it's national politics or international politics, about what's going on. And it's not like I didn't know that. And everybody knows that there are propaganda people telling people what they want to hear. Year, you know, there are the right wing ones that are well known in my country, but it's just as true in the left wing storyline, and it's just is true in the spiritual community. Oh, this is absolutely true because so-and-so said so. Well, how do you know? Well, I trust him and he said so. Uh-huh. So, yeah, everybody else is corrupt. Everybody else is telling lies. But this one guy that I trust is okay. Good. So none of the information that that person is being given, that they're making their, all they're putting together their point of view from, is in any way manipulated, and they're absolutely clear. Good to know. As you can tell, I'm not buying it anymore. So basically all that is saying is pay attention, pay attention, pay attention. There's always more going on than we're told, and it's always at least a little bit different from what we're being told. We live in interesting times. Anyway, that's tonight's metaphysical musing, or what is it? A rant. Yeah, I do rants every once in a while. Anyway, so my guest tonight is Ani Tusman, and I'm excited to meet her. Ani, thanks so much for being on the show.
Thank you, David. I'm glad to be here.
And you've written this amazing novel about the Baal Shem Tov, who was the mystic rabbi who started the Hasidic tradition in Judaism, which I knew a little bit about and had some vague idea of the story, but you did an extraordinary job of making it very, very personal and going into a whole lot of detail. So I want to hear more about how you did that. And your writing is beautiful. You're a poet, and I just love your writing. But first, I always ask our guests, how did you wind up in the place that allowed you to do that? How did your life unfold? What was the journey that got you to the place where you could write a book like that?
It's a great question, and I think, as with many of us, my whole life really contributed. I didn't know at the time as I was moving towards, but I can see it now. There's almost nothing that didn't, but some in broad strokes. I grew up the daughter of Holocaust survivors and refugees to this country, and so there was an interest always in what was a truncated legacy and ancestry of Eastern European Jewry and just Eastern Europe in general. And so that was always an interest, and it was always mysterious. It was so painful for my parents to talk about, but it was always an interest. And then my own childhood experiences involved, I was the only Jew, and the town didn't know what to do with our family, told us to go back where we came from. So that also engendered in me this longing for understanding and acceptance of differences. And also writing became a way. I couldn't have a voice in certain other ways, so I found my voice in writing. Mostly nothing that was ever shared, diary after diary after diary, to this day.
Right.
And then there was this Baal Shem Tov I heard about. I heard about him from rabbis. I heard about him even from my parents. And what I heard ever since I was young, really, but then took it in later when I was older, was that he saw all people as equal. That really grabbed me. And that he was joyous. My parents were not so joyous. And that he was joyous, and that he loved children and respected women and children. And so this figure was almost, I didn't know he loved to dance, actually, but he was like a dancing energy in my mind and my imagination. And then fast forward, I experienced an inner call to write a novel about his teachings and his life. And I said yes.
Which is always a wonderful turning point.
Yeah.
So, you know, there's historical information about the Baal Shem Tov, and it gives the broad brushstrokes of who he was and what he did when. But the book that you wrote is profoundly personal. Mm-hmm. It gives detail about the life and the emotions of all of the family and all of the people around him, who was born when, who married who got hurt, who died, how people felt about it. It's just a profound level of insight and emotion into things I'm sure are not in the historical record.
And, you're right, they're not. But they're in the human record, you could say, right?
Right.
They're in
right.
in each of us. And yes, so not in the historical books, especially, of course, writing about women and their roles.
Right. Right. And there was so much wonderful detail about, I mean, clearly he was a man that respected women in a way that in his time was in many ways dangerous for everybody, because they weren't supposed to be included in anything. And here he was teaching them to read, including them in prayers, all kinds of things that were not allowed. But you got into their heads and into their hearts in a very special way, talking about what they did and who they were. And even for him, the story of him as a young man was just wonderful.
Mm.
You can tell the story, the summary of the story as much as you'd like. But, you know, he started out as basically someone who was seen as a nobody. And
right.
through the force of his personality and his spirituality, people suddenly realized there was something different about him. And it wasn't a bad different, it was a good different. And that he, people felt better when they were around him. And,
right.
Which to a certain extent, I think, is the story of many mystics.
Right.
You know, here's the local weirdo. But you know, when I'm around him, he's everything's better somehow.
Right.
What's so how did that come through to you to allow you to write all that detail? What was the process?
There were many dimensions of the process. Much of my experience writing the book was that it came through me. And mm-hmm. I wrote much of it actually while spending time in the woods on mm-hmm. long hikes and walks with various generations of recorders. I think I started with maybe a Sony Walkman and the little digital ones with the teeny weeny cassette tapes and then finally, or not digital, then graduating to digital. But what happened was that I began with a lot of research because I really wanted to invite the readers into an environment that was tactile, visual, that they could feel with all their senses they were mm-hmm. inside of. So while the book is timeless, the teachings are timeless, it's also set in a time in the 1700s. And I wanted to render that as accurately and as sensually and as truthfully as I could. So luckily I live in a place with lots of colleges, and I used the university libraries. At one point, I had over 100 books out of the library. The internet, when I started, wasn't as Wikipedia, I don't think even existed yet, and there wasn't as much available. So I needed to piece together so many aspects of the historical period, the Jewish mysticism, many mm-hmm. different aspects. And so I had pieces in the different books. And so I spent a few years reading and immersing myself in the period, also getting ideas for scenes and moments that I wanted to communicate. But then when the writing began to flow more is when I would take these long walks, immersions for hours, sometimes at a time. And I would often write what I saw as if I were watching something and recording it. Mm-hmm. It was both coming from me and through me from a source beyond me. And it was an extraordinary experience to be able to be receptive like that. And to, there would be times, just one example, where people would come to the Baal Shem Tov and they would ask these really difficult questions about death, about healing, about why he healed some people and didn't heal others.
Mm-hmm.
I would need to wait, sometimes days, sometimes hours, sometimes minutes, for the answer to come through.
Right.
I would wait with them for the answer to come and either speak it if I were recording. Sometimes later as time went on, I could sit down at the computer and have that same experience of almost the words coming through my fingers on the keys. And
yeah. Automatic writing.
That's what it felt like somewhat. It's a mysterious thing to describe, and I'm sure other people have experienced it. Even when I hear the book now, sometimes I've had the occasion to hear someone else read it, and I both recognize the words, and I'm in awe of them. Like, where did that come from? So it's both are true. I've crafted the words. The book went through many revisions. So, of course, my own writing, my own voice, my own vision is in there. At the same time, it doesn't belong to me in a certain way. Mm-hmm. Sense, yeah.
Well, orient people that have no idea who this was and when and where it was happening. So what's the time period and the location?
Oh, it's the 1700s. He was born right before the turn of that century. And it takes place in what was known as the Polish-Lithuanian Commonwealth, now the Ukraine.
Mm-hmm.
And he was orphaned. Well, his mother died at the time of his birth. What's interesting is that he didn't write any books, and there weren't any written really right after or during his lifetime about him. And most of the stories are legends. And in fact, when I started working, there was only one book. It was a translation of a Hebrew book called Shivya HaBesht, which is legends about the Baal Shem Tov. And so mm-hmm. there's some historical information, and there's more. A scholar has written a book that has some more historical information gathered from some records that were found. But most of who he was and what he did is, as I say in the preface to the book, swathed in legend. And I right. love the legends. And I love he was a mystic. He was, there were healers known as Baal Shem, or Baal Shem is a master of the name. And they used, that's how he gradually got that name. But they names and amulets to heal. They also used herbs and other things to right. heal. And he did that also. So there are many legends of his making magic, of his being an herbalist, of his, and I love that as well. And so he was, as you said earlier, he was, when he was a child, couldn't learn to read or write. He was considered, people felt sorry for him, this poor orphan. His father died when he was 5. He was passed around from home to home. And as you said, gradually, and even surprising himself, he intuited things. He knew things. He could feel the hearts of those around him. And he became an arbiter. He became a healer on many levels.
Right.
And went on to become a spiritual leader in his time.
Right. And challenging most of what was traditional in Judaism at that time, and not just in that time, you know, the traditions and the very elaborate sets of rules that are laid out in Judaism.
There's certain things, of course, he deeply respected. And what I think is that the essence, and Torah and study and the importance of service and, devotion, he didn't challenge the essence.
Right.
He, in fact, expressed the essence. He renewed the essence. Because there was a lot of social stratification. There was a lot of the learned looked down on the majority, who were not learned. And men looked down on women, and nobody respected the children. And so, and even relations between Jews and those who were not Jewish. So he wrapped his heart, his arms around all of that, and also confronted abuses of power. And it's one of the reasons many people now, I'm getting several notes every week now, several messages increasing from people who are talking about the book being an incredible solace and inspiration right now at this very time in our country.
Yes, especially the latter part of it is very,
there is, I don't want to do any spoilers, but there is a figure and others who abuse power. Often figures like that are wounded individuals. And this one in the book certainly is, which does not condone or excuse. And the Baal Shem Tov shows up to face that, to confront that, and counsels those around him. And there's a quote I keep on my desk. He talks about standing rooted in love. The line here, it is, I'm counseling you to stand rooted in the truth you wish to protect rather than bent over by fear. Mm-hmm. I urge you to strengthen your faith while remaining vigilant. And someone says, how, Rabbi? And he says, instead of focusing on the misuse of power, employ your vigilance to go deeper into yourself to find your true power. And that true, and act from that power, because he certainly acted, and those around him did as well. And they were coming from that incredible, indomitable love within us.
Right. And that allows you not to be intimidated by the people who are wielding power by intimidation and lies. So, that part of the story is definitely very, very relevant to the course of history at the moment.
Right.
It's an amazing story on so many different levels. There's so many pieces of who he was, but also how his life unfolded, but also how his life unfolded in terms of his community and in terms of the way the world was changing at that point. So I just, as you can tell, I love this book.
I'm glad. I did too.
I get that comes through. So let's make sure people know where they can find you online.
Sure. Thank you. So easy. It's anitusman.com, which is anitusman.com. And also I have Ani Tusman author, and Facebook is another way to find me. And the website is brand, the new author site, annietuzman.com. Also, if anyone Googles The Tremble of Love, the name of the book, it'll take people to the same place, thetrembleoflove.com.
Perfect.
And it's wonderful. There's lots of resources, and people can download chapter one. Those who are reading the book, there actually is a glossary.
I need to interrupt you because we're going to the break.
Okay.
So we will be back shortly, unless, of course, we get taller. My guest is Ani Tuzman, and we will be back to hear more about the Baal Shem Tov and the book. This is The Farkas Files on Empower Radio. Don't go nowhere. We'll be right back.
The Empower Meditation Channel. Non-stop meditation music 24 hours a day in the new Empower Radio app. Music to empower your meditation, help you relax, sleep, or provide a calm background while you work. The Empower Meditation Channel is interruption-free. Listen now with the Empower Radio app, free in the App Store, or listen online at empower.fm. Soothe your soul. Calm your mind. The Empower Meditation Channel.
This is a guided meditation on parenting. Take this time to breathe deeply and close your eyes. Right now, you're completely in control. Unlike the time you and your son played basketball and you attempted to slam dunk. Or when you tried removing those raccoons from the basement. Concentrate on the soothing sound of my voice. Release the memory of when you wrestled with that beehive in your son's treehouse. Let go of the time you thought that skunk was a cat, or when you pulled into the garage with your son's bike on top of the car. Deep breaths. Deep breaths.
You don't have to be perfect to be a perfect parent. There are thousands of teens in foster care who don't need perfection. They need you. For more information on how you can adopt, visit AdoptUSKids.org. A public service announcement from the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services, AdoptUSKids, and the Ad Council.
Wildfires burn millions of acres across the country each year. And each year, wildland firefighters battle to contain them. But they can't do it alone. For some communities, it's not a question of if wildfires strike, but when. And a single ember can travel more than 1 mile. As it twists and turns and floats through the air, that single ember can find its way to where you live and can ignite and destroy your home or your community. That single ember can be just as dangerous as the wildfire itself. You can't control where the ember will land, but you can control what happens when it does. You can take action now to prepare your home and your community for wildfire. Get fire adapted. Learn what you can do now to reduce wildfire damage later at fireadapted.org. Prepare, protect, prevail. A public service message brought to you by the U.S. Forest Service and the Ad Council. Learn more at fireadapted.org.
I wasn't prepared to be a caregiver to mom. I had no idea how hard it would be and what I would need to know. Things I never thought of, like how to improve her mood and ways for me to stay positive. Luckily, I found the Caregiving Resource Center from AARP. It had articles about the basics, but also information about the hurdles I was facing. Caregiving Resource Center at aarp.org/caregiving. Articles, tips, and tools to help you both care for your loved one and care for yourself. Brought to you by AARP and the Ad Council.
Smile. You found Empower Radio.
Now back to the Farkas Files with David Franklin Farkas on Empower Radio.
And we're back with Ani Tuzman, author of The Tremble of Love, a novel about the Baal Shem Tov. And I kept looking for that phrase, the tremble of love, and I only saw it once. I thought that was going to be a repeating theme, and like, oh, there it is. There it was.
There is trembling in different scenes, but yes, right. The tremble of love is in one scene in particular.
Right, the phrase. And that tremble, that Kundalini experience is very common for mystics, but not so much for people that are not mystics. So it looks pretty strange to people who are unfamiliar with it. But I love stories about the experience of mystics, because it gives people a window into a different way of being in the world and what that experience is like. And that is a thread that goes through all of this.
Yes.
And what's it like to live with somebody like that? And that goes through all of it. But there are some extraordinary things that he experiences and that people see and are pretty surprised at what they're seeing. So I love that. I really love that.
And also that he reflects to people their own, and that's his, their own inner love, their own, as we said before, inner power, their own, and that there's not just one way that that manifests or gets expressed. So, for example, there are disabled children in the book, or differently abled is the phrase I don't use in the book, but I like to use. and they bring their gifts, huge gifts. Of course, he's a Kabbalist, and the belief is that there are sparks of love everywhere, sometimes often, in fact, hidden. And our part of our being here together is to find those sparks, free those sparks, recognize those sparks so they can be recognized, as he does, in potential murderers, in everyone, and celebrated. And I love that also about him and about the story. He doesn't set himself up as a mystic that's better than or even other than the other people that are around him.
And all of the is probably will get me in trouble to say real mystic, but all of the mystics that I have met or read about or seen film of, who have really gotten to that deep place of love, basically say the same thing. It all winds up being the same thing, and they all put it back to you. And going it, it's really a pain in the neck when they're doing it to you.
Find it within.
You know, go inside and find out. Ask.
Right.
You know, and here's a technique you can use that you really hate. Yeah. But it works.
One of the things I love, as you may remember from the book, is, for example, the tailor comes and says, who's taking care of a sick mother and a sick family. I can't pray at the prescribed hours. And the Baal Shem Tov's response is pray with every stitch. But the prayer the prayer is life. The prayer is how that, and the tailor's prayer is his caring for his sick mother and his sick wife and doing his occupation to support his family. So he prays by stitching. And so he doesn't prescribe esoteric techniques, which I also love. He meets people where they are and reminds them that they're worthy, and reminds them that they don't have to go other than where they are or out of their lives. Not that prayer together, communal prayer, he doesn't minimize, that's what I was saying before about, he doesn't take issue with every aspect of Jewish tradition by any means. It doesn't tell people not to pray communally or not to study Torah or any of that. And he doesn't subscribe to people being less worthy if they're unable to read or if they're unable to go to the synagogue at prescribed times, that they bring their loving hearts, that they can bring their service to the world wherever they are, however they are, and whoever they are. And it's just such a seeing the world with the eyes of love. And then by doing so, of course, evoking love to be expressed. And that's what transforms our world.
Yeah, it's a beautiful unfolding of a beautiful teaching over and over again throughout the book. It's really wonderful. So, as I said before, I really love this book. Well, you have to realize, and, you know, this is one of those trade secrets. Don't tell anybody I said this. But, you know, I get a lot of books. I get a lot of authors. And typically, I don't read the whole book. I don't have the time, for one thing. And I want to get the gist of it and give the person a chance to talk about it. And I start, when I got your book, the proof of your book, I got not very far into it and said, I got to read the book. I can't have her on until I read the book. And I don't remember the last time I've been so sucked into a story like that. So in my life as somebody who has a lot of books go across my desk, it was very different.
It's wonderful. And that's wonderful to hear. And I have heard other people, some people had requested advance review copies. And I handed them in person, some I mailed, some I handed. I remember the faces of a couple of people when I handed them, you know, a 500-page book.
500-page book, right, and exactly.
And those very same people, every single one that had expressed some concern or told me I'm a slow reader, this is going to take me a long time, or even a number of people who told me I don't read fiction really anymore. I read spiritually oriented books, or, you know, and all of these people read it cover to cover. And in fact, numerous people have begun to read it a second time. And it's just very heartening that the book does invite people in so deeply. And what I think is happening for many, and myself included, because I read it over and over again, I don't tire of it, is that the book invites us into our own hearts, as well as a world that's back in time and set in a different place and era. It really is, as people have called it, a retreat between the covers of a book, or a pilgrimage to the heart. And that's I'm so glad that people, that's an understatement, are having that experience, because it was my experience writing it. It's my experience of what the Baal Shem Tov does and brings, as well as other characters in the book, that invitation, that reflection, like I said before, that reflection of our own love, our own power. And so that's what we're invited into.
Yeah, it's pretty amazing. So in addition to writing this incredible novel, you do other stuff. So what else are you up to?
What else am I up to? Well, for years, I've been what I love the term now, writing mentor, because that's really descriptive. And so I've done, and I'm doing that still in somewhat different ways, but I've led writing groups and worked with people one-on-one to find and free and rejoice in their voices. And for many years, gosh, over 20, I worked with children and teenagers. And now I'm working with women over 60, which I adore, and I have groups that meet in my home. And the other thing that I'm so excited about is that I'm going to, as well as taking the book on the road, I'm going to be offering to those who welcome it and would like this for their communities, what I call, I called my work Dance of the Letters for years, yes. my mentoring work. And I'm going to be offering Dance of the Letters writing circles. And they can vary tremendously in their themes, but I'm particularly excited about bringing together groups of people who perhaps are different from each other. And using writing as a way to write into and from the heart and listen deeply to each other. Mm. And I know the power of writing for healing and the power of writing in a safe container where people can write deeply into their experience and be listened to and witnessed. And so I can imagine doing this on various themes, but among them themes in the novel, like compassion, self-compassion, deep listening, what's God anyway, you know, all sorts of themes, as well as just open-ended groups. And so I'm looking forward to taking Dance of the Letters on the road as well in some places where I'll go with the book. So that's one thing I'm up to. And I'm a grandmother, which I love.
A grandmother.
How
old are your grandkids?
One, she will be turning 2 in a few weeks. And my grandson, her older brother, turned 3 a few months ago. And they live in New Orleans. And I'll be going down and actually staying with them without their mama, my daughter. Their papa will be around, but my daughter's going to help a friend who's having a baby. So it'll be her first time away from them that way. And I'll be with them there. So that's another adventure.
So both of them will have that little kid voice that starts at about 2.5 and goes to 5 and then disappears. I stop people in the supermarket and say, you know, you get this every day, but I think it's really cool and it's going to disappear at 5 and never come back. So really enjoy it. And then I walk away. Yeah. Little kids are very special.
Very special. Very special. And that's one of the things also in the Tremble of Love, the presence of children. And as teachers, as well as, and I could feel a lot of, you asked earlier how I think something like how I knew some of that or how, where it came from. And a lot of it in the process of writing the book came from what I describe in the preface as my inner relationship with the Baal Shem Tov. And a lot of it was deep inner intuition or knowing, and I could feel again and again his delight in children, his delight / reverence, and his joy and his ability to meet them and see them and empower them and reflect their life force. And so they figure strongly in the book and in the story. And he has such, in the purest sense, childlike, not childish, but purity and playfulness and innocence and spontaneity. And he embodies those qualities as well.
Yep. And he also treats them with love and respect in a way that many children don't get. I was very fortunate to get that from my dad. But I always remember that my dad would kind of watch me and go, how do you know that? how did you figure that out? You know, and most kids didn't get that kind of, basically respect.
respect.
Basically seeing who you are. Respect, yeah. Seeing who you are and being acknowledged for it in the moment.
And that's such a kind of key word, not to use that phrase, key word, but it's a key word, a key experience in the book is respect.
It's respect, yeah. Absolutely. Yeah. Respect and love.
Right.
Yeah.
And the power of those that seem so simple and yet is so profound to really find that respect, love, and compassion, not pity at all, not pity, but compassion and genuine ability to feel into the heart of another.
Yeah, it's, as I said, the whole way that relationships are and circumstances are described in the book is just absolutely gorgeous and delicious are the words that come out. it was surprising all the way through. I was found myself constantly saying, well, what's going to happen now? And what's going to happen with these people? How are they going to relate and what's going on with this? So there's one of the things about the book is there's a lot of people generation after generation and all the names and all the rest of it. And I'm not good at keeping track of all of that.
Mm-hmm.
I call it a girl thing. I was right there with it because the personalities were so clearly described.
Right. And it's why also I did add a list of characters in the back of the book.
Yes.
It was, agreed with the idea of family tree, but I didn't, genealogy charts, I guess they're called, but I didn't want to do that because I didn't really want to give away who marries who and who parents who. And yet I did, so I presented it as an alphabetical list of characters and some of that's there, but I really wanted it to just unfold and not have these.
I totally get that. And, my very visual brain wanted that genealogy chart. Now, who did what to who here? How did this come out?
Maybe on the website eventually I'll put that up. But for now, I chose to do it with that. And also alphabetical people could then look up a character. But
right.
And then, of course, the fun of creating the glossary was another wonderful experience.
Oh, yes.
to have the words there for people to see and also go for essence in the meanings of the words, too.
Right. Right. Another aspect of going to that place in time and culture.
Yeah.
Which was a culture that spoke Yiddish.
Yep. In an earlier incarnation of the book, there were even more Yiddish words, and some of the names were more Yiddish or Hebrew, and I changed some of them. And some of them I couldn't change. I just couldn't, because that's who that was. Gedalia was Gedalia, and so he couldn't become, but Samuel was Shmuel. That's his Hebrew name. But
I felt some of those nuances of changing the names. I was like, oh, I see what you did here.
It's such an incredible thing for me to have them who lived so long inside of my imagination that felt bigger than my head, that felt as big as the forests I would walk in, but nobody could hear them and see them. No one could hear them talking. No one could feel when one of them died. No one could, feel the experience that Gedalia just had or the awakening that Dovid just had. And it's such a remarkable thing that I'm still getting used to, really, that people can enter the world. And people can not only know the characters as I might, but know them in, have their own entire experience that might not right. be just what mine is, and be in that world and know. And that's such a thrill to for people to know, not only to watch the Baal Shem Tov and to feel his blessing, really, and also to know Leah and Rivka and Gedalia and David. It's just amazing. Right. I'm still in that pinch me, you know, that people really are able to, they're not just in my imagination anymore. So that's right. That's been a wonderful.
Well, in a really basic way, you gave them life.
Yes, and of course, many of them are, or some of them, are based on characters. But really, I gave them life, and I think I also felt like I just discovered the lives they had. That's what right. it felt like. Like,
well,
oh.
But in terms of other people having the experience, you created that window.
It's yes,
an amazing thing.
Yeah, it's quite, every once in a while, someone reading the book will write me and say, and I won't mention names, someone just died, and I just have to stop reading for a while. I'm crying. And I, when that happened, when I saw that someone was going to die, I had to stop writing for a while and grieve.
Right. Right. And no, so, I totally get that.
Or someone writes and says, something about, I love when people share in the midst of their reading a moment or an encounter, or that's also a very special experience for me when that happens.
And it's a very special book. I know I will be reading it again, which is pretty unusual for me too. So Ani, of course, and with all the guests that are fascinating, we're running out of time.
Mm-hmm.
So tell people again how they can find you.
So they can find me. People can find me at anitusman.com. And that's, shall I spell that? Or is it?
Oh, yeah.
Okay, so it's A-N, like in New England. I, T like in truth, U, Z, M, A, N, anitusman.com. Or if it's easier to remember the name of the book, thetrembleoflove.com. And the book is available, as I said earlier, that chapter one is available for download on the website and to get a taste of the book. And the website also tells where the book is available. It's available in paperback, in hardcover, and in ebook versions. It's available on Amazon and other online retailers, IndieBound, and can be special ordered by any bookstore, hoping that libraries will start to carry the book. People can
request. Absolutely, right.
So
it's fantastic.
And
I am so glad that I got to read the book and I got to talk to you about it. And I hope, since we don't live very far from each other, I hope we get to meet sometime soon. My guest tonight is Ani Tusman, and her book is The Tremble of Love. And thank you so much for being with us. You stay on after the show. Maybe we can chat for a couple of minutes.
Okay. Thank you, David. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Ani. And if you guys listening are saying, who is this guy David and what in the world does he do? You can find the information at househealing.com with every conceivable way to get in touch with me, including a link to make an appointment for a free 20-minute phone conversation. I can do a reading and assess what's going on with a person, place, situation, business, whatever it happens to be, and we can see if my work might be helpful to you. If you want more information about the show, it's at thefarkasfiles.com, the whole archive of whatever it's been now, 5.5 years, is there, but you can also access all of it from the Empower Radio app, which you can download at whatever flavor of app store you use. And we're also streaming on, streaming on iHeartRadio, TuneIn, Stitcher, and iTunes podcasts. So if you just plug in Empower Radio or Farkas Files, we show up everywhere and you can listen to us at your convenience. And it's so much more convenient than it was even 6 months or a year ago. So it's really very cool. So thank you so much for spending some time with us this evening. Thank you one and all for being here. Until next week, this is David Franklin Farkas for the Farkas File. The truth is in here somewhere on Empower Radio. Have a fantastic week. We'll be right back.